Vladimir Nabokov was a Russian-born novelist. He achieved popular success with his novels Lolita in 1965, Pale Fire in 1967, and Ada in 1969. His fiction has never been praised for his compassion. It's said that he was single-minded, if nothing else. Nabokov was also an entomologist. That's an expert in the branch of zoology which is concerned with insects. One summer in the 1940s, Nabokov and his family stayed with James Laughlin in Alta, Utah, where Nabokov took the opportunity to enlarge his collection of butterflies and moths. One evening, it's told that he returned from his day's excursion, saying that during the hot pursuit of a rare butterfly near Bear Gulch, he had heard someone groaning down by the stream, and it sounded like they were hurt badly. Laughlin asked him if he'd gone to help the person, but Nabokov said, "Certainly not. I had to catch the butterfly." The next day, the corpse of an aged prospector, was found in what has been renamed in Nabokov's honor, Dead Man's Gulch. The dead man was Nabokov, man who was so wrapped up in his own interests that he was dead to the needs of others, dead to the important things in life. Paul writes about selfish people in 1 Timothy 5, verse 6, who live for pleasure as being dead while they live. Learning to have a proper attitude toward ourselves is not an easy thing to do. Charles Kingsley, a priest in the Church of England in the 1800s, once said, "If you want to be miserable, think much about yourself. Think about what you want, what you like, what kind of respect that people ought to pay you. Think about what people think of you. Then you will spoil everything." He says, "Then you will make misery for yourself out of everything good. You will be as wretched as you choose." William Gladstone said, "The greatest curse of the human race is selfishness." This is a lesson that's never learned by many people, and it's a message that's often resisted by many of the rest of us, because being selfish is just such a natural thing to do. On September 10th of 1813, after defeating the British fleet in the Battle of Lake Erie, Oliver Hazard Perry, commander of the American fleet, dispatched one of the most famous messages in military history to Major General William Henry Harrison. It read, "Dear General, we have met the enemy, and they are ours. Two ships, two brigs, one schooner, and one sloop." In 1970, cartoonist Walt Kelly used characters from his long-running cartoon strip called Pogo in addressing the condition of the environment, and he famously paraphrased Perry's statement as, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." As we face struggles in our lives again and again, if we're honest with ourselves, we must admit that we are often the problem. In different forms, self is often the enemy. Self being the enemy comes in the form of, for example, self-complacency, self-satisfaction. This is the attitude that says, "I'm fine just the way I am. There's nothing wrong with me. If we're having a problem, it obviously must be you." It's the attitude of being too easy on ourselves, letting yourself buy with things that you would never let others buy with, accepting results from yourself that you would never accept from others. There are people who spend their lives leaving others hurt and wounded in their wake, while they never entertain the possibility that they are somehow responsible for the body count. This attitude of self-complacency is epitomized by the Church of Laodicea at the time when Revelation was written. Revelation chapter 3, verses 15 through 18, Christ speaking to the people there, the church, his people, he says, "I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot, so then because you are lukewarm and neither cold or hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say," here is their self-assessment, "because you say, I am rich, I've become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and you do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked." It's hard to see ourselves as we really are sometimes. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12, "Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." Self being the enemy comes in the form of self-conceit. Self-conceit is an exaggerated estimate of one's abilities, one's merit, one's self-worth. A number of years ago, I saw a portion of the TV show Undercover Boss. You've probably seen that. The CEO had a bunch of chain restaurants. I can't remember what they were. And he's visiting this one, and he's working with this young, attractive girl. And she made a comment at one point addressing herself, letting him know what she thought about work. She said, I don't think beautiful people should have to work." Self-conceit is thinking too highly of yourself. It's inordinate pride, thinking that maybe the world revolves around you, that everybody's just thinking about you all the time. It's easy to become self-absorbed. At the age of 20, we worry about what others are thinking about us. At the age of 40, we get to the point that we don't care what others are thinking about us. By the age of 60, we realize people haven't been thinking about us at all. And we need a little more of that, perhaps. Pride comes in many forms. Some people are guilty, perhaps, of thinking that they should place no value at all on themselves. And ironically, in this way, some people take pride in their own humility. We can be proud of all kinds of things, proud in all kinds of ways. James chapter 4 and verse 6 says, "God resists the proud." Self being the enemy comes in the form of self-indulgence. This is the philosophy of "if it feels good, do it," the philosophy of what we call hedonism, which itself is a Greek word which means enjoyment, self-indulgence, pleasure-seeking. Self-indulgence is pampering yourself, doing the things that you enjoy while neglecting the things that you should do. Self-indulgence is what destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Self-indulgence has brought down many nations, rotting from the inside out. Self-indulgence is in the process of destroying this country. Self-indulgence brings many lives to shame and to ruin. Self being the enemy comes in the form of self-centeredness, being me-centric, Wayne-centric. Everything revolves around Wayne. Everything revolves around me, me, me. Doing what you want with no regard for others. Doing what pleases you, what you enjoy, putting that above everything else. A little boy and his younger sister were fighting over who was going to get to ride the rocking horse. Both of them were sitting on the horse at the time and wouldn't get off. Neither one of them would. Finally, the little boy said, "If one of us would just get off this horse, there would be more room for me." self-complacency, self-conceit, self-indulgence, self-centeredness. Truth is, nobody likes somebody who's like that. And the sad part is that the someone who is like that doesn't even like themselves. It's a miserable thing. And as I reflect on my own life, it's obvious to me that the times I've been most miserable are the times I've been the most wrapped up in myself. It's been said that a life all wrapped up in itself makes a very small package. But there's good news there. The good news is that we can change. If your life is characterized by these negative traits, that is the good news. You can change. The bad news is it will cost you dearly. For however many years or decades you've been living with yourself on the throne, it will cost you. It will cost you the very thing you love so much. It will cost you self. But it will cost you more not to change. We all have certain likes. We all have certain dislikes. When a person's life is characterized by self-interest and everything that's suggested to them to change their course in life is met by, I just don't like that. Or that's just not the way that I am. Dr. Phil's question comes to mind. Well, how's that working for you? Fact is, we have a choice about what we will do. We have a choice about what we will become. Joshua's challenge to Israel again, choose this day whom you will serve. And that's a choice that we all make, and we make that choice daily. There are three attitudes that we need to employ that are the antitheses, the exact opposites of the attitudes that we've just considered. We need to learn self-denial. Jesus said in Luke 9, 23 through 25, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and is himself destroyed or lost? If you desire to come after me, deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun now, does it? But the fact is, even generally speaking, no one accomplishes anything worthwhile without the strength of and the quality of self-denial. We need to learn self-control. The proverb writer said in Proverbs 16:32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who controls his spirit is better than the one who takes a city. Self-control, there's a lot of literature, a lot of proverbs that have been written about the qualities of self-control. Self-control over one's thoughts, self-control over one's tongue, over one's actions is absolutely essential to function in the world, and these are qualities that are essential in order to serve the Lord. Famous passage where Paul was reasoning with Felix in Acts 24, verse 25. He reasoned with him about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. In Galatians chapter 5, in that list of the fruits of the Spirit, the last part of that list in verse 23 adds gentleness and self-control. Peter talking to those recipients of his letter about adding virtues to your life. Adding virtues to your character. Add this, add that. Add to knowledge, he says, self-control. Without self-control, we are at the mercy of every desire that pops into our mind. And we give in to self-complacency, self-conceit, self-indulgence, and self-centeredness. And finally, we need to learn self-sacrifice. Fact is, we are called to be a living sacrifice, a living sacrifice. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Now, there have been cultures who've sacrificed living people before. It's not what he's talking about here. Not in that sense, obviously. But the problem with a living sacrifice, a willing living sacrifice, is that it keeps crawling off the altar. You try to place yourself up there, but then desires come and interests come along, and you just really don't want to stay up there on that altar. Putting our self-interest to death is not an easy thing to do. We read passages like Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. We think this sounds nice, until sometimes we have to apply it. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Look out not only for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. Two friends met for dinner in a nice restaurant. Both of them ordered filet mignon. After a few minutes, the waiter came back with their order, and on a large platter, there were two pieces of meat. One of them was obviously smaller than the other. The one guy proceeded to serve his friend, and he placed the smaller piece of meat on a plate and handed it to his friend. And his friend said, well, that took a lot of nerve. He said, well, what's the problem? His friend said, well, you've given me the little piece and you've kept the big piece for yourself. He said, well, what would you have done? He said, well, I would have given you the big piece and taken the little. He said, well, you should be happy. There are many things in life that we can't change. Certain physical characteristics, certain likes and dislikes, certain innate tendencies, but we can change our attitudes toward ourselves. We can do that. We can choose whether or not we allow selfish interests to rule our lives or whether we will allow God to rule in us. Changing the way you think and the way you feel about things, about yourself in particular, can be one of the biggest fights in your life. And so some people will walk away saying, well, self-denial is simply too hard. Surely there's an easier way. There's got to be a middle road here somewhere, but there is no middle road. You either deny yourself, you take up the cross and follow Christ, or you live for your selfish interests. Jesus said, no man can serve two masters in Matthew chapter 6. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 6, verse 16, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death, there's one choice, or of obedience leading to righteousness, there's the other. These are the options. This is not a popular message, which is why most people will go through the wide gate. Most people will follow the wide path because it's easier. It's easier in terms of instant gratification. It's an easier choice because it demands less from us. It's like the dark side of the Force in Star Wars. If you're not familiar with Star Wars, it's just going to go over your head, I guess. Sorry about that. But you just give in to your anger, you give in to bitterness, you give in to hate, and you give in to your natural inclinations, and you'll get there even more quickly and you'll get stronger. It's the quick, it's the easy path. The light side of the force, however, is altruistic. They eat baked chicken and broccoli. While the opposition is saying, come to the dark side, we have cookies. Sorry about that. In Kate Hamilton's book called Queen's Garden, she writes of a Moorish palace, which she says had a small grotto-like entrance into which we were invited by placards announcing the wonders and beauties that lay ahead. But once inside, there were only mirrors. And whichever way you turned, you saw only yourself. You looked in one direction and you'd grown tall and thin. You looked in another direction and you were short and wide. Your face expanded or lengthened in the most astonishing ways. In every direction, the mirrors lured and deceived you, promising exits where there were none, and only bringing the bewildered face to face with some other distorted reflection of himself, only himself. There are people who spend their lives in the Moorish palace. Whichever way they turn, they see nothing but themselves. And soon it grows to be an exaggerated and a distorted self. They see themselves made little by imagined slights, and they are resentful. They see themselves grow important by some success, and their pride is gratified. And even when they think they're working for God, self can come slipping back into the foreground. If you come to realize that living your life for yourself leads only to misery and heartache, and you're ready to change that, you can turn your life over to God today. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, if you make the decision to turn your back to sin and to self, known as repentance, you can confess Christ as Lord. And according to Romans chapter 6, you can die to sin as you're buried into Christ in baptism, having your sins washed away, being raised up out of the waters of baptism to walk in newness of life, having put yourself to death. Let's stand together and sing the song. If you're subject, please respond.